Call meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. See, we do have a quorum present. The first order of business would be the perusal and approval of the minutes from March 4th. We entertain a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Representative Falk, whose approval of the minutes, are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the approval of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. First bill on the agenda for today is House File 1131, Representative Bly.
Thank
Representative Bly, I don't think I need to say welcome to the committee. But
thank you, Chair and Committee. I want to move my bill, but I do have an amendment. I want to move my bill and to be laid over for consideration for an omnibus bill.
Very well, Representative Bly moves House File 1131 be recommended to pass and lay over the possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill. Representative Bly, two-year bill.
Yes. Should I take care of the amendment first?
But if that's your
okay.
Desire.
In order to get the bill in the shape I want it to be in, I'd like to move amendment H1131A1. And essentially what this does is a couple of things. One, it adds into the list of stakeholders representation by an organization representing tenants. And then Bobby Elock had another suggestion, too, about an earlier Lyons bill. Could I call upon him to explain that change?
Mr. Elock. Explain away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's line 1.2 of the amendment, which just makes it clear that this information is to be given to the purchaser or renter prior to the purchase or rental of the property in question. As kind of a full disclosure piece. I assume that's the intent.
Yes. Okay.
Is there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Bly, to your bill.
Thank you. House File 1131 is a bill which would ask for a study and report, and it's a recommendation of the progress in addressing climate change, the committee that was working on that. And essentially what it does is it asks for the formation of a stakeholder committee that would make recommendations about what kind of information would be important for tenants to have on their utility statements and bills that would give them a better idea of how they could conserve energy and help us to meet our goal of reducing the effects of climate change. And I've asked Mr. Elwood to come in give further explanation and talk a little bit about the bill.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. We, of course, represent the interests of low-income Minnesotans in a variety of areas, one of which we've been very active in over the last decades is certainly energy and the utility issues, which is, of course, a vital service for our clients, as it is for all Minnesotans. I'd like to support Representative Bly's bill, House File 1131. I think it makes a good advancement in disclosure and information for prospective buyers and renters. I'd like to point out that there is a precedent for this sort of disclosure already in Minnesota law. Several years ago, in the landlord-tenant statutes, Chapter 504B, where there is a shared meter situation, in other words, where there's one meter in an apartment unit serving more than one unit, so there's only one meter, but it's serving multiple units. In that case, the property owner has to be the customer of a record, but there was a provision added that the property owner could take the monthly bill and essentially divvy up among the tenants. And when that statute was enacted, also enacted at the same time was a provision that required this very kind of disclosure prior to a tenant entering or renting, leasing up in that unit. So the tenant had a sense of what the building's usage was and how much their monthly energy cost would be. So there's already a precedent to this. It's a good one. What Representative Bly does here is expand it, and I think for very good purposes. And I'd also like to thank Representative Bly for expanding the group of stakeholders in the study in my view, balance it out a little more to include both the manufactured home park owners and the manufactured home park renter groups, to include property owners, the landlord groups, and also the tenant advocates. So I'd like to thank you very much for doing that. I think it's a good bill, and I would urge you to consider it very strongly in the inclusion in any policy bill you put forward.
Representative Bly or Mr. Elwood, what would you, I presume this is not pure science in asking for this study, what would you hope that the outcome would be? What are we trying to achieve here?
As I alluded to before, it's really to try to assess what information do tenants or potential owners need to know that in changes that they can make to improve their energy consumption, and also how they can bring down their utility costs. I think it's a good exercise to take and help people understand what they can do to make positive change.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Ellis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I also think that what could be a very valuable outcome of this is to determine the format of the information and how it's presented, because as we all know, we all get a lot of information about a whole lot of things, but if it's not presented in a digestible format for the audience, it's just going to go right over people. It's not going to be useful for the purpose it's intended. So I think this group could do a very good job with the expertise that it looks like is on there to create a useful product.
Members, we do have at least two people that wish to testify in relation to the bill. And before we get to them, are there questions for Representative Bly or Mr. Elwood? Representative Nornes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bly. Isn't this really the same charge that we already have given the utilities to fulfill? I guess I'm still trying to figure out why we need to do this.
Representative Bly.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nornes, there is some information given now, but it's not detailed enough so that people could really benefit from the information and make necessary changes in their use. So it would give more and detailed information to the homeowners or tenants.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, has there been a cost assessed to the Department of Commerce in doing this study?
Representative Anderson, we asked for a fiscal note, which we have not received yet from the department. That is a consideration that we'll take up when we get the fiscal note. The motion is to lay this bill over, and before we did anything further with it, that certainly would have to be considered, but we don't have that from the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget yet.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bly or Mr. Elwood, the amendments, I think, I wasn't sure the scope or the purpose of the information, and I just want to clarify. I have more questions about the bill for later, but to clarify that the amendment makes it, especially line 1.2, the purpose is a additional disclosure at the time of sale or lease of a property, correct? Yes, correct.
Although, I, you know, the, as the information is produced, I would imagine that you could continue to make evaluation, but that might be something that the stakeholder group would consider and decide how best to implement. As Mr. Elwood said, the format is important and how all of that gets related. And I, you know, I suppose, too, there may be, as the stakeholder group meets, if there is a determination that something else should happen or some other legislation or action might be beneficial, they maybe can recommend or talk about that as well.
Seeing no further questions at this time, Chair Elwood, thank you. Mr. Willenquist?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to this meeting.
Thank you. My name is Todd Willenquist, and I'm with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Let me start by thanking the author for including the multi-housing industry in this bill as part of the study group. The Minnesota Multi-Housing Association is neutral on this bill. Although we are neutral, I would like to speak today to a few issues I can see the study group encountering should this bill pass into law. As Ron Elwood mentioned in his testimony, first of all, landlords are already required to in certain circumstances, to disclose to prospective and current tenants certain utility information. Landlords of single-metered buildings may bill tenants for units separate from rent, but the landlord must disclose certain utility information. The landlord must provide notice to prospective tenants of the total utility cost for the building for each month of the most recent calendar year. The landlord must put in writing the equitable apportionment method and frequency of billing, and upon a current tenant's request, the landlord must provide copies of actual past utility bills. Second, even in situations where separate utility meters exist, there are significant differences in the manners in which consumers use energy. Some tenants may want to keep their rental unit cooler and may keep their unit at 60 degrees. Others may want it warmer and keep it at 75 degrees. Prospective tenants' amount of energy use may be significantly different from the current occupant if their consumption of energy is significantly different. Disclosure of energy use in such circumstances might not be truly informative. Finally, landlords are required to keep their rental properties reasonably efficient, energy efficient. Landlords are required to install weather stripping, caulking, storm windows, and storm doors when such installations will result in energy procurement cost savings while applying an economic feasibility standard. These energy efficiency standards have been incorporated into the rental housing covenants of habitability, which means that, among other things, a tenant may have the rent abated if it can be shown that the property was not in compliance with the energy efficiency standards, again, taking into consideration the feasibility. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Are there questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you. Ms. Berger? Berger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the 20,000 members of the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And we, too, would like to thank the Chair for including us in the task force that is being created in this bill. And we, too, are neutral on this bill. What we are currently doing, the realtors, is I called some of my realtor members to find out, and they pointed me in the direction of some of our MLS listing input forms that do actually already require realtors to input annual electric expense and annual fuel expense. And so some disclosure is currently being conducted. During the during the task force discussion, some of the issues that may come up for discussion would be whether energy providers from the large ones all the way down to the smaller co-ops can provide uniform data, disclosure data across the state. That would be of interest. And then also something that Mr. Lundquist pointed out is that consumers' usage of energy does differ. I am married to a European, does not believe in running the AC. So for the last 2 years, we haven't turned it on. So my energy bill in the summer is obviously a lot lower than someone else's who may run their, like my mother, who may want to run her air conditioning all summer long. So, and we would just hate to see any liability put on sellers if I disclose my low energy costs and then the next consumer moves into my property, runs their AC all year long, and then maybe comes after me because I didn't disclose a high enough energy number on the statement. So, and then finally, we wouldn't care to see a policy that would delay or hinder the transaction, especially in light of today's current marketplace. So, again, just thanking the chair for including us, and we look forward to the task force. Thank you very much.
A question for Ms. Berger. Ms. Berger, would you back up to what you said initially about what information is already available?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. We have an MLS system, a multiple listing service system, and many of the input forms that the realtors use, for example, I did bring with me just as an example, the multifamily, so for condos and townhomes and quad units, those types of properties, a realtor would use this type of form. And this is what they would go off of to input data into the multiple listing service. And one of the elements that they would be required to enter into is the annual electric expense and the annual fuel expense.
Representative Ackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So am I to understand that you're already doing this? With this form, is that correct?
With this form, yes.
Okay. So we don't need the bill. And, Mr. Chairman, I understand that this is already public information through the utility vault.
I think we would need clarification on that.
And we need them to
public information
cost.
Specific to individual property?
Yep.
Representative Western?
Well, Representative Hackbart's not done, but I would like to hear from the utilities. But Mr. Chair, as I understand it, people can get a 12-month average from a utility. They may not get a monthly billing, but an average of 12 months does get that. But maybe somebody from the utility section or PUC could give us that type of testimony.
We'll certainly invite anyone who is present that would wish to clarify that for us to do so. Berger, thank you.
Thank you.
We don't seem to have any takers, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe we'll just call them out of the audience if they don't want to come. We'll just march them one by one up here.
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Evans is looking like he's eager to come to the table.
Let's start with Rick. Mr. Chair, I am just...
like cool me.
Thank you, Jeremy, for that reasonable accommodation. But, Mr. Chair, I was going to ask the utility just if they had a perspective on this bill, whether the onus would be on them or the Department of Commerce, and I wasn't clear yet.
We have Mr. Evans at the table, Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. My confusion was only, I'm afraid I wasn't listening, so I didn't hear what the question was. I didn't want to come down and answer it. But I think I understand the question now. We have had our folks look at this bill, and they haven't raised any objection to it. And we kind of run it through the parts of the company that would be affected by this. So if the question was, you know, have we looked at the bill and are we okay with it, the answer is yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wester.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, what is the current policy, or what is public, what is not? Representative Hackbar said he was under the impression that this information is public in my experiences, calling Excel, if I want to get a 12-month average, they give me a 12-month average. They won't give me a specific person's bill month by month, but they'll aggregate the data and give me a monthly average over the last 12 months. Is that the process, or is that public, or can you just shed a little light on what a current renter or home purchaser may be able to get from your company?
Mr. Edmonds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, I believe we don't share that information with anyone except for their own residents. I can't tell you I'm absolutely positive about that, but I believe we do not share that information. For an individual home, we may get questions from time to time about, you know, sort of gross energy usage, but I think if somebody called us and asked us to provide the energy history for use at a particular address, I believe we would not provide it.
Representative Westrum.
I'll let you know if that turns out not to be true, but that's my
belief. Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, I won't indict your company, but I'll visit with you afterwards. And I think that's consistent to some degree, but I, on properties that that I rent out, I have from time to time been able to call your company to find out what the, because if the renters pay the utilities, they won't give me that information on the renters, but they have given me aggregate data, which if you got a calculator or you pass sixth grade math, you can figure it out. But Mr. Chair and Mr. Evans, if we could just get clarification on that, because I think it would be helpful to know what currently is available. And perhaps it's because I'm the owner of the property that's had accounts with them on that same property when the renters don't have it in their names. But I'd be curious to know if somebody, maybe we won't have it today, Mr. Chair, but we're laying it over. Maybe we could get the answer to that, unless Representative Bly already knows.
Well, I'll certainly attempt to do that, Representative Westrum. It occurred to me I could possibly call your utility and ask them for information about your bill and see what happens and give us a clue about how this works.
Mr. Chair, mine's a municipality, so it's pretty small. They might just be a little leery because of the size.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bly, I think that the goal of your bill is to put adequate information about energy consumption, electric and natural gas, in the hands of the users, in the hands of the consumers, to be able to then impact the behavior in a positive way, which is to make the consumption go in a negative direction, correct?
Right.
I do know that we don't do enough of that in this state. And so I think to Representative Hackbarth's question, the reality is that in the blizzard of information that's part of the disclosure of at the point of sale, I think that more disclosure ends up getting lost if it's not in the format that Mr. Elwood referred to. I do have to say that I was hoping that your bill was going to go in the other direction before the amendment, which is on the monthly information and putting information kind of weather normalized and compared to your neighbors. And actually, as you and I talked about previously, I think that I'm not convinced that we need to do a study. I think that what may be appropriate is to direct the utilities to make a qualified expenditure under the SIP research and development assessment to taking the successful work that's happened in other states and create the opportunity for that on-bill information to happen in Minnesota. I think I know that CenterPoint and other utilities are struggling to figure out how to make the goals that we've given them on conservation and taking individual behavior change and actually put their name on it and get credit for it. I think making this actually work with on-bill information that says, you know, you might use 72% compared to your neighbors of a similar square footage or other every month. The data's out there, the programs work. It's private data, so it's only you getting your information. I'm not going to learn about my neighbor, David Bly, who's, you know, using 2% compared to my energy hogs. But I think it's a very good idea. I think the mechanism, as we lay the bill over and can develop it more, I think that the mechanism can be strengthened so it's not just point of sale, but also every month when you're actually paying attention and writing out that check or approving your electronic transfer, that you get the information and means that you can actually change what you're doing. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I'll just point out that there are other utilities in other states, I think, that are listing the exact information, the contact information for energy audits, and for sort of green contractors who can come in and then implement the audits. So therefore, I think it can strengthen the utility connection to the homeowner and put more information and a remedy in the hands of the homeowner and the renter.
Is there further discussion to this bill at this time? Seeing none, Representative Bly, thank you. The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Next on the agenda is House File 863.
Representative Hilsey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. I would move that House File 863 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus energy policy bill. Members, what House File 863 does is basically two things. Section 1, lines 14 through 16, provide that the utility can carry forward energy savings for a period of up to 3 years. This has been a concern for a number of utilities that have pardon me, told us basically that some of the energy savings programs that they can enter into will result in savings beyond the requirements that they have for the year in which they're accomplished. But kind of for the time being, at least, exhaust the possibilities that they have and have asked that in the spirit in which the law is intended, would it be possible for them to carry forward some of the credit for energy savings into subsequent years up to the limits that are described in the bill. I think that is appropriate, and I hope that members would concur with that judgment. Second part of the bill deals with the Legislative Energy Commission proposing a study or requiring a study by the commission, and members, they do have the A1 amendment to that section of the bill, which I think has been distributed. And Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the A1 amendment.
To your motion, Representative Hilsey, all those in favor of moving the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I think you need to ask if anybody is opposed.
My apologies. Anyone opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted.
Even nobody opposed. That was sort of ambiguous. Mr. Chair, members, technically, of course, the Legislative Energy Commission could decide to do the study whether the legislature directed it to or not. But I do think that it's something that rises to a level of significance that it's good to actually have that direction from the legislature. What the amendment proposes, and I'll just read that. a study, and this is a study under the SIP statute and the SIP program, a study of the following issues. The proper allocation of energy savings resulted from utility or third-party conservation activities, especially consumer education programs designed to change consumer behavior. And members, I should point out that what this study is calling for perhaps is an overlap with Representative Bly's bill to some degree, and something that hopefully we can work out as these bills go forward. Second, the use of a third party to develop or implement in whole or in part the utilities conservation improvement program. I think there's precedent for this, certainly in other parts of the country, of using third parties for this purpose. Third, allowing a utility to make conservation investments outside of its service area, statewide aggregate energy savings increase as a result. And remember, this is just a proposal for a study. This is not a bill to this effect. Fourth, the benefits and costs of and the barriers, including data privacy issues, to the timely provision by utilities to customers or third parties of individual customer consumption data in electronic format that is designed to assist customers to improve energy efficiency, which, of course, is the issue that we've just been discussing. And five, the use of rate structures, including increasing block rates to encourage energy conservation. Members, that is the bill, the carry forward, and the study provision. I'll stand for questions if there are any, and I would ask for members to support as we go forward.
Any further questions?
Chair, I would just move then that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill.
Representative Hilty moves that House File 863 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Bill is laid over.
And Mr. Chair, it's your prerogative to lay the bill over.
The bill is laid over. Thank you.
Representative Magnus, House File 1155.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 1155 to be included for possible inclusion in an energy omnibus energy bill.
Thank you, Representative Magnus. You want to tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mariah's with me here from the department, too, to help out. This is a department bill that we hope will be sent on and help them with a bit of the paperwork that they're having.
Representative Magnus, there is a... Do you have an amendment?
I do have an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to move that.
That deals with the majority of the bill. I would like to move that at this time, the A1 amendment.
Representative Magnus moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like to discuss it. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank Mr. Eloff, too, for his help, because I think
I think if you looked at it, the amendment that certainly makes it a little easier to follow and clarifies our intention here. Mr. Chairman, I think with this, I'll just turn it over to Mariah here to explain what they're hoping to accomplish with the amendment.
Chris White, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Mariah White, Office of Energy Security. First, I would be remiss if I did not thank Representative Magnus and Representative Gunther for offering this bill. We do appreciate it. What we're trying to do with this bill is a pretty simple but pretty important function. For a couple of years now, since the RAS has been implemented, we have, us staff at the OES have asked ourselves, while we were taking very seriously reviewing all of the functions and parts and requirements of the Certificate of Need statutes and rules, why they pertain to wind projects anymore. Because the legislature, in our minds, provided the basic need for wind projects when you pass the renewable energy standard. It's going to take a lot of renewable energy to fulfill that standard. We are working very hard. Utilities are working very hard. All stakeholders are working very hard to fulfill that standard. So in our minds, we take certificates of need very seriously, as any of the utilities can tell you that have had a certificate of need. We make sure that every T is crossed and I is dotted, and all the requirements for every provision of the rules and statutes are covered for every certificate of need that we do. This can entail many levels of testimony, defending our positions on the witness stand, a lot of very detailed analysis, and even for the smallest wind project, we go through the same basic analysis and file pretty extensive comments with the Public Utilities Commission just to make sure that the record is complete and all the provisions of the Certificate of Need are complied with, even for little wind projects. What this bill does, what we want this bill to do, or hope this bill does, is basically exempt wind projects from the Certificate of Need requirements. Section 7, which I thank Mr. Eloff for taking a look at it and clarifying the language, shows you the provisions that and the requirements that show that it's a wind project. It is used to help fulfill the requirements of the renewable energy standards, or it's included in a utility's integrated resource plan as needed to provide energy to their customers, or it's a SIP project or a seabed project. In any case, what this does is basically forestall a wind project from having to hire the expertise necessary to put together a proposal or a request to the commission, which sometimes can be quite a big document, cost them money, cost them time to put it together, then they have to go through all of the regulatory processes that are required for it. And it takes time. It takes a matter of months to get it through the entire process. Wind projects would be able to avoid this. From now on with this bill, all we would have to do is file a letter with the Public Utilities Commission saying, I'm a wind project. I'm being used to fulfill the terms of the Minnesota RES. Here's a showing of this. They could have a signed PPA, purchase power agreement with the utility, that shows them that that's what it's for, and they're done. That's all they need to do. They can go ahead with whatever they need to do for siting requirements or anything like that, because we don't touch that. Siting processes are too important for the landowners and all of the other stakeholders. So we're not touching that part. This is only the certificate of need. And with that, Representative Magnus and Mr. Chair and members,
And Mr. Chairman, one additional statement is that we are waiting for a fiscal note on this. We expect to save the state as much as possible. That would be unique.
I'm all for saving time and money. We do have Mr. Bull also wish to testify in the bill too, Mr. Chairman.
He is on the list, and before we bring him down, are there any questions for Ms. White? Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. White, when you said even the smallest of wind projects, just looking through the language here, aren't ones less than 80 megawatts or 80,000 kilowatts exempted currently?
Ms. White?
For some, what you're talking about, is this CPEG project?
That's my fault.
Just on lines 1.12.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Ms. White.
Representative Falk, you are correct with the 1.12. When I say the smallest wind project, I mean the smallest wind project that would otherwise have to file for a certificate of need.
Representative Falk?
Ms. White, so is that a more than 80 megawatt project?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. White.
Representative Falk, that's correct.
Mr. Yulon, please. Okay. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who may want to answer this question. It may be Mr. Eloff in the end, but I'm looking at line 224 that refers to section 216B.1691, subdivision 9 and statute, which is another section of statute related to the renewable energy objectives. And I'm wondering if that section of statute would conflict with making this language permissive, because that section of statute already requires to assess economic development and a whole list of other things, including impact on ratepayers. So I'm wondering if you want to accomplish this objective, if you need to address both sections of statute, or at least address the role of this section of statute in relation to your proposal.
Ms. White. Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a very good question, and I don't know the answer to it, so I will have to defer to Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Eloff.
The section to which Representative Briner is referring under the RES asks, or says, the Commission shall take all reasonable actions within its authority to ensure this section is implemented to maximize benefits to Minnesota citizens, balancing a number of factors: local ownership or participation in energy production, development and ownership of eligible facilities by independent power producers, cost of energy generation, and reliability of electric service. That still stands. As I understand what Representative Magnus's bill does is, whereas current law requires the commission must consider four factors, essentially those in clauses 3 through 6, the bill says now the commission may consider those clauses as well as clauses 1 or 2. So it makes all those clauses discretionary on the part of the commission as to whether or not they want to consider them in under this section. And I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, and yes, and subdivision 9 in the RES law does speak to some, but not all, of those same factors.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Briner.
Yes, I see what you're saying, but I think if you read that, I mean, there's an inherent contradiction in terms of those it does speak to, because this language is, while it doesn't say must, it's a much stronger requirement. May is totally takes away any requirement. So I do think there's a conflict between moving to May in this statute and the existing 216, whatever this, you know, this statute that's referred to here. So I think that's an issue in moving to more permissive language.
Ms. White, did you One question we've got, Mr. Chairman, is which line is Representative Breinart talking about? Are you looking at the amendment?
No, I'm looking at the bill itself.
Okay, I thought
224.
Representative Magnus, the amendment replaces Section 1, but we're talking about Section 2 here.
Okay. All right.
So, Ms. White, what perhaps a question would be, what is the rationale behind changing the must to may for, with respect to those four subdivisions?
Mr. Chair, I think members, I think it was more of an attempt to go from a must file a certificate of need to loosen that requirement. I think that was basically the reasoning for going from a must to a may.
So Ms. White, isn't that, it's only must consider, it isn't. So basically what we're saying here is if the commission so desires, they can just say we're not going to pay any attention to any of these things.
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct.
That's why is that a good thing?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what you mean by is that a good thing.
Well, we're changing something. Presumably, we're changing it for the better. So I want to know why it's a good thing that they can decide not to consider these four factors.
Mr. Chair, I think if you look at line 2.19,
right,
where it says the commission may consider, and then I think there, if you go to line 2.22, and then it says must consider, I think there was a question about if you may consider or must consider. I think there was a question when we were looking at language if this list, which is looked at as a full list, a 1-6 list, it's not a divided list, it's one list, what should be made consider and what should be must consider. I think it was just an attempt to clean up the language that may not have been having to clean up.
Well, perhaps we can give this a little further consideration as this bill goes forward. Are there any other questions, Representative Breinart?
Mr. Chair, just a comment on that. When the language was written, this was part of a bill that Excel put forward to amend the certificate of need last session, and I carried the bill. And I'll tell you my understanding of the differentiation between the first two and the last four.
Okay.
The last four were must rather than may in order to honor what was currently in statute under the renewable energy objectives, and that's that 216B.1691. So the must was meant to reflect what was already in statute rather than creating new requirements. That's my understanding of how that was written. So I do think just removing it doesn't resolve your dilemma because of what's already in statute.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. White, two quick questions. Do you consider an 80-megawatt project to be a small project or not?
Ms. White.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, considering the total size, breadth of projects that we work on, when you're looking at anywhere from 1 megawatt to 600 plus megawatts, and I'm talking about the entire breadth, 80 megawatts is on the smallest side. That's why I said that. It was not any indication of a small wind project versus a large wind project. We're not trying to differentiate between size here. What I was speaking to basically is if you look at the total breadth of sizes that we look at, 80 megawatts is on the small end of our total breadth.
Yes. Representative Paul. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last question was, do you feel that we shouldn't force Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to at least look at economic development as one of the criteria for approving a project?
That's why.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paul, could you say, I wasn't clear on what you said. Can you say that again, please?
With the striking of the language on line 2.22 and must consider the facility's ability to promote economic development, is it your thoughts or intention that our Minnesota Public Utilities Commission should not have to consider economic development as part of certificate of need proceedings?
That's right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, not at all. I think it should be looked at. However, it is part of the list that it says the commission may consider. So it's still on this list to be considered. It hasn't been removed at all.
That's why I just feel that the requirement, if it's must, they have to consider. If it's may, they do not have to consider, which I really think the interests and the benefits of the state should be weighed when making these decisions, and we should look at economic development as one of those benefits.
Are there further questions for Ms. White? We do have Mr. Bull to testify. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
this for Ms. White?
Yes, it was. I'm sorry. I didn't raise my hand.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Thank you. And Ms. White, I just wanted a little clarification just looking on 1.27. We're talking about exemptions that generate electricity from wind energy conversion systems. I was just wondering why, if there was some reasoning behind why you did not consider saying the language of or a solar electric generation facility. I see that that's in some other language further on in the bill.
Ms. White.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that was not a conscious attempt to exclude any other type of renewable energy. What this statute originally considered was wind energy, so we just left it with wind energy. Other parts of renewable energy, of course, can meet the RES. Most of the projects that we have seen that are such like biomass projects, various solar PV projects, by themselves, to the extent that we've seen them so far, are not large enough to trip a certificate of need to start with.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. White. Yes, I recognize they aren't at this point. I just wanted to be sure that we weren't precluding that from happening in the future.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not at all. Not at all.
Thank you.
Ms. White, once again, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bull. Members, while Mr. Bull is taking his seat, I think both Representative Falk and Representative Brainerd have raised questions that probably need some further resolution. Since we are laying this bill over, I think there will be ample opportunity for them to speak with Representative Magnus, who's nodding his approval to that process, I trust.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Take a look at the statute myself. I don't have the book here.
We'll get it straightened out. Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mike Bull. I'm the policy manager for Wind on the Wires. And the way I was reading this, Representative Bryant, was that it wasn't a change in policy that relative to the provision that you worked on last year and authored and passed through, but rather that it was in a year's practice implementing that policy that the technical staff at the commission and at the department had some additional tweaking, as it were, that would make this provision work better for them. And in the regulatory process, when I talked to the folks there, that was their intent, was just to make the last year's provision work in a smoother way for them. And the wind industry, obviously, and environmental groups that I work with support that in terms of getting these projects through the process and up and running and generating electricity for the benefit of Minnesota. So in that regard, Mr. Chair, Representative Brainerd, I see it as more of a technical provision, but I can see the additional focus that might this might benefit from some additional work. So, Mr. Chair, I don't think that cleared anything up for you, but I rarely do when I say that.
Well, just to summarize on Mr. Bull, you do support the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we support the bill and think that the major change was Representative Reinert's bill from last year. That was the big policy change, and now it's just making sure that it works in a smooth way for the regulatory agencies and the parties as it goes through.
And before you escape, are there any questions for Mr. Bull? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I rarely do this, but I'm hoping that I can actually make sure that Mr. Bull does not fall on the sword, but it's I that falls on the sword, because I, now having listened to the conversation, I remember being in Representative Briner's office working on the language of 216B243 sub 9 section 2 language, and I am now recalling that we had three versions of may consider, must consider, and just consider. And so I don't think that the bill is in the final form that we need it for the pieces, but I do think that it will end up being a much clearer thing, reflection of the chicken scratch that we had on a piece of paper. And Mr. Bull, you were not there, and so you could not have made that error. It was mine.
I appreciate that.
Well, Representative Kalin, we've held Mr. Bull responsible in the past for lots of errors that he may or may not have had anything to do with. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bull, is it in the lawyer's position that you shouldn't have to consider local economic development when determining whether or not a project is needed or not?
Mr. Bull.
Representative Hilty, Representative Falk, no. The provision, the underlying provision, the subdivision, the 216D 1691 subdivision 9 was something that Wind on the Wire has worked extensively on in the 2007 session.
Any further questions for Mr. Bull? Seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, Representative Magnus, we will lay House File 1155 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Members, a reminder that this evening the Legislative Energy Commission, which a number of members of this committee are members, will be meeting in room 15 at the State Capitol at 6:15. This will be an organizational meeting in which I hope we can have a general discussion of the goals and the direction of the organization of the commission, since this will be its first meeting. And I would remind you also that on March 25th, we have scheduled, I think, for the same time and in room 200 of the state office building, hearing on the various proposals for the lifting of the moratorium on certificates of need for nuclear power facilities in the state of Minnesota. And I'll remind you, as I said at the last meeting, what we anticipate is in the Legislative Energy Commission meeting, taking expert testimony, that people are coming from various parts of the country to testify. We will take expert testimony at that time, and we will be scheduling in the day following, or the day after that, at least, a hearing in the in this committee to actually act on a bill. I've asked the authors of those bills to come together and agree upon which one we would bring up for action, since they're all virtually identical, and I think that that has been taking place. That's the plan. Is there any questions about that? I would be happy to entertain them. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, separate issue, so if you're not done with that, I just had a question.
I think we're done with that.
Okay. I just had a question. When you're talking about bills, I know the department, I understand, is vetting out some ideas for the stimulus dollars, and is there some discussion about different ways to maybe use those dollars, and will there be any hearings that maybe just are focused on those types of bills before deadlines? Do you anticipate? I understand there's not a lot of prescription, and I'm wondering just how we can, in a rapid way, try to formulate policy to benefit from that $55
million. Representative Westrom, I think that Representative Kalin's bill was an attempt to deal with that. That bill is still moving, and as you recall, that's coming back to this committee, and I would think that that would provide the context for that discussion. And okay. Certainly, we do need to have that discussion. Certainly, a lot of details that need to be worked out.
So Mr. Chair, if other members had other ideas, and we put them into a bill form, would that be helpful in flushing out probably discussion and potential amendments to Representative Kalin's bill when it gets back here?
Representative Westrom, I would think that would be appropriate.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Eliff maybe doesn't think so, but...
No, Mr. Chair, I was suggesting that it might be better to put them in amendment form at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Representative Kalin.
To that point, I think Mr. Eliff... strategy is probably more timely, just considering that Thursday my bill is scheduled to be heard in Representative Rukavina's committee, and I believe the only remaining stop under the finance umbrella is this committee again. So I'm hoping that sometime soon we can hear the bill, and no need to worry about jackets and introductions, I would hope.
Yes, so Representative Westrom, I do think that under the circumstances, that would probably be the vehicle for any amendments that, you know, and any proposals, unless there's something that you have in mind that's just totally different, in which case. There's no further business to come before the committee. We are adjourned.